Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. I'm Danielle Vincent, and today I'm joined with my colleague, Kathleen, and we have guest Tanith McCulloch today. We are going to be talking about sibling abuse. So before we start, I'm just going to give a trigger warning that, of course, we're going to be talking about interactions within the family, sexual abuse, and anything in relation to those things. So if this is going to be triggering, please do turn off and join us for a future podcast. So with that said, let's commence. So hi, Kathleen. Hi, Tanith.
Hi, Denny. Thanks for having us.
So Tanith, would you like to just give us an introduction as to your role and what we're going to be talking about today?
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Tanith McCulloch. I'm the Sibling Sexual Abuse Project Officer for SORSAS. I'm also a counsellor and a supervisor, and I'm delighted to say we have received funding for a two-year project specifically dedicated to adult survivors of sibling sexual abuse. So I spearhead that.
Brilliant. So one of the things we're going to be talking about is this is obviously going to get quite a lot of traction in the media because it's going to be playing out as a storyline, and we're going to talk about that later. But first of all, what's the key things that you have learned and things that are going to progress from the project that you started?
So originally back in December last year, we received funding for a two-year project specifically designed for adult survivors of SSA. That was off the back of a previous two-year national project funded by the Home Office. So within that project, SORSAS were the leading partners, and it was in with Rape Crisis England and Wales. So in March 2022, that project concluded, and it was the largest government-funded project to date, and it included conference for frontline workers and survivors. So we were delighted. Part of the research into that was that adult survivors needed a voice and professionals needed upskill, basically. So off the back of that, then we received the funding to develop a national hub for adult survivors so we could amplify their voice and they could be the spearhead for change that is needed. We all know the amount of stigma and shame that's associated, and unfortunately, society aren't fully aware of this type of intrafamilial abuse, and we need to be comfortable having the uncomfortable conversations and recognise the prevalence and the detrimental impact that it has for adult survivors and the family as a whole. So with that being said, we decided to do something bold and courageous. Our project is solely created by and for adult survivors. So we have a core steering group, which is made up of a number of people with lived experience of SSA. And they're from all different backgrounds, different places of the world, and both male and female representatives. So that in itself has been hugely empowering. The whole project and the direction that it has went and what has been achieved has been as a direct result from the lived experience advisors. So it has been a huge privilege to be a part of that. The three aims of the project are basically to empower and create a virtual community of adult survivors and allies. We have done that. We have created such a powerful, impressive community full of strong and courageous people. Another part was creating a virtual hub and community for adult survivors so they could have a safe community to minimise the sense of isolation and marginalisation that they feel, and to find a safe space to say this happened to me as well. And again, it's just starting to build momentum, but so many survivors are coming forward saying this is a lifeline for me. I can't believe there are others out there. So that in itself is hugely healing and cathartic to know that people aren't alone and they don't have to suffer alone in silence. Another aspect of the project was to upskill professionals. So part of the previous two-year national project headed by Rape Crisis England and Wales, with SARSAS being the leading partners, one of the key pieces of research was to interview 718 professionals. So within that, we have found there are numerous statistics, but basically 73% of professionals agreed that they had not received the appropriate training or awareness in relation to supporting people who have been impacted by sibling sexual abuse. That in itself was astonishing. So we knew that we needed to do something. And the beauty of the training that we provide to professionals is it's in direct response to what adult survivors want professionals to know. So it's not theoretical background. Obviously, yes, research is thrown in there, but everything is co-produced and co-facilitated by those that have been directly affected firsthand. We also find that within the previous project, there was another key piece of research, which was a Freedom of Information request from police services in England and Wales. So out of that, we find that 24% of all cases involving children under the 18, 24% were reported to involve sibling sexual abuse. And that in itself, for sibling sexual abuse being so underreported, is hugely staggering. It didn't involve any cases that were reported to local authorities or schools. These were only cases that were reported to the police services. And even within that, we found that the documentation and recording of that wasn't done effectively. So from that, how police go on to record cases of SSA will hopefully improve and that data will be much higher.
Is there a plan to offer kind of upskilling to police as well around this issue? Because I would imagine that there's probably, if there's a lack of education amongst professionals who are, you know, providing therapeutic support to victims and survivors, the lack of knowledge or kind of skill around this issue would be equally or more amongst police.
Yes, and I'm delighted to say, without going into huge detail, one of our survivors and powerful advocates has been working alongside Bluestone, a project in it, and is working alongside other police forces in generating awareness and upskilling new police trainees. It would be our hope that if we receive further funding and that we can branch this out across all statutory services.
Yeah, that's brilliant. One of the things I was thinking, Tanith, well, first of all, the project is amazing and I can see the kind of possibilities for so many other areas of sexual abuse where you have a survivor-led community. But I thought it was important maybe to take a step back for a second and just talk a little bit about what sibling sexual abuse is, the difference between that and so-called normal kind of sibling sexual play, you know, the importance of language as we kind of talked about before we started recording, all of that stuff, just so we are educating our listeners who might not know about what this means.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the difficulty. At present, there is no universal definition. Now, Rape Crisis England and Wales definition is a form of harmful sexual behaviour that goes beyond normal curiosity, that involves the misuse and power of one sibling toward another. Sibling sexual abuse can happen within any gender. Typically, people would say it's older brother on younger sister, but we are finding that it can happen in any dynamic, whether that be brother on brother, sister on sister, older sister, younger. But quite often it goes beyond normal curiosity and age-appropriate development. You're referring to sometimes, and this is the controversial thing. People don't want to understand that siblings, yeah, there can be a normative type of sexual play. Mm-hmm. That's show me yours and I'll show you mine, doctors and nurses. It involves giggling. It doesn't involve coercion or a power. Quite often when there's an opportunity to educate, whether that be through parents, teachers or older siblings saying that's not appropriate, the behaviour stops. Mm-hmm. The difference between abusive, harmful, the definitions vary. When professionals talk about two children under the age of 18, they will refer to it as harmful sexual behaviour between siblings. Now, working with adult survivors, we know that can feel quite minimising because for a huge amount of adult survivors, the abuse continues once the harmful behaviour stops. So the impacts lead on into adulthood. With that being said, it can involve both touching and non-touching behaviours. So showing a sibling pornography, it can include touching genitals, it can include penetration, but doesn't necessarily have to include it. Mm-hmm. Basically, if one child has been victimised, that is where it is abusive. That may not be apparent in childhood because of the age and stage of sexual development. The child who's being abused at the time mightn't understand that it's abuse. They may think it happens in all families. And it's only when they're older then do they start sexual relationships and understand, okay, that wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't have happened. And again, it can be a one-off incident. You know, there are so many myths. People think with sibling sexual abuse, it usually happens at a younger age. The duration is much longer, on average, roughly about 4 years. But that doesn't take away one-off incidences that can still be as hugely detrimental. Again, it is a matter of how the victimized child feels about the behavior. At present, we have no threshold of, right, this constitutes as abusive, this doesn't, because there's so little societal awareness. It is very hard to distinguish and very hard to meet a threshold or a guideline. So this is why it's important that people are open and take a holistic view of it and ask the survivor, ask the child who has been harmed, what it means to them. You know, and not necessarily just them, but any later adulthood, because sometimes we can take for granted if they're not displaying any symptoms of trauma, then it wasn't abusive. But the reality is in later life, that's when symptoms may appear.
Yeah.
I hope that covers what you were trying to ask.
Yeah, no, that is, you know, as I said earlier, I think this is such a difficult subject. And I just can see as you're talking all the barriers for a victim survivor, you know, was this actually normal? What's my part in it? You know, is the complicity, obviously, as we know, is a huge issue in relation to sexual abuse in any event, but how harmful that whole concept is to a victim and survivor, but also the impact on the family. I don't want to tell because what could this mean? And, you know, if dynamics of family relationships, even, you know, it's just such a huge thing. And I was listening to a podcast and doing some research about this before us talking today. And I can't think of the exact quotes, but it was a professor who had, you know, has done some research and study on this and how this is like just a topic that is so difficult for us as society to talk about. It's probably the hardest type of sexual abuse to talk about, I think, is basically what he was saying. And that really resonated for me, that how difficult this would be to actually talk about.
And that's what we found, again, in one of the key pieces of research, because it was saying that it was believed that there was only an 8% societal recognition of sibling sexual abuse in comparison to parent on child or other types of interfamilial. But it was also found that 89% of professionals believe that was because the period of childhood innocence, we believe that such a thing couldn't happen. And then also the thought of believing that that can happen between siblings is repulsive from a professional's viewpoint.
That was the word that he used. It's repulsive to people. So they can't and isn't that amazing? I'm just thinking as you were talking that for some reason, it's almost more palatable for people to be able to accept that parents abuse their children, which is such a huge breach of trust, versus being able to accept that a sibling could abuse another sibling.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference between DSA whenever we believe that it's an adult that perpetrates. So therefore, everyone is behind the victim. And saying this is completely wrong and they're 100% supported. Within SSA, it is much more difficult and quite often it is often minimized, leaving the survivor re-victimized and that victim shaming aspect of it.
Yeah.
And like one survivor said, it benefits the family to keep the victim silent.
Yeah.
And I just thought that is so powerful and yet so true because they're afraid of the family being broken up. They're afraid of myths and stereotypes associated with it. What does this mean? Everything that goes along with it. But yet that's where the dynamics of sibling sexual abuse continue into adulthood. Yeah. Once the behavior stops, the dynamics within the family continue, whether that be silence, minimization, having to separate kids at family functions, and then people asking why. You know, again, that, well, sure, it's been so many years, you just need to get over it. And that is hugely detrimental to survivors.
Yeah. So one of the things that we're hoping, and I'm sure you're hoping, is going to make this a lot more of a talking point, is this is about to play out as quite a big lead storyline. And your organization has advised on this, haven't they? So we can now say, I'm sure that it's going to be, because it's already been in the press, but it's going to, this storyline is going to play out in Hollyoaks. And what are you hoping will come from this? Because this is, you know, a mainstream, quite, Hollyoaks is a soap that actually features a lot more with the younger audience rather than some of perhaps the older soaps. So what are you hoping will come from there?
Well, it has been a huge, huge privilege. The hope is to get conversations going between families. Like the start, as you'll have seen at present, and I'm not going to give any spoilers away for the storyline, but as you see, Frankie, who's been abused, is shown as a very wayward child and very defensive, different things that has shown the impacts that trauma can have when it's not spoken. So that in itself, and I know at the start it was like, oh my goodness, it's going to be so controversial. What's society going to say? How's it going to be played out? And you see, for me as a leader within this project for adult survivors, the amount of adult survivors coming forward in social media who are fighting against the people saying this is disgusting, it shouldn't be aired, it is just an absolute privilege. And I'm going, so far, we have done exactly what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And by having those conversations, hopefully those that have been impacted can come forward and recognize, okay, it's not just happening to me, there is help and support out there. It will encourage dialogue between families, professionals, that actually this is something that does exist. And I know within the characters they're twins, so that can be, and I'm going to put the quotation, not representative usual type, but the reality is there is no representative or usual type within sibling sexual abuse. So that in itself is breaking down barriers. I just have to take my hat off to Hollyoaks. They want to make sure this is as authentic and sensitive and an appropriate portrayal. They have interviewed survivors. They have interviewed people who have offended and perpetrated on their sibling. They have interviewed police. They have done their research and due diligence, and they want it to be as accurate a portrayal as possible. But again, as I say, they're not every situation is going to be accurate because it's unique to that family, that household, whatever else is going on. So it has just been, the fact that it's been reported, the Ofcom, I absolutely love.
I mean, the thing is with these, whenever there's a storyline that plays out and
you know, we've seen it before. We've seen it with the sexual abuse with a particular coach when that was aired. The calls that came in then to different charities for support was phenomenal. People felt the strength to reach out and seek help. And, you know, as you know, so, some of the people that this has impacted will have been silent for decades. So I'm sure, especially with this, you know, you'll see a surge of people either wanting to seek help or talk about it or not. Hide in silence, which is, you know, any time that a soap tackles a very difficult issue in regards to sexual abuse, I always see that there's so many positives that come. You know, people may complain about it, but this is a true life thing that happens. So,
yeah. And that's exactly it. And that's what we are seeing. You know, so many comments saying, if I had have known about this 20 years ago, I wouldn't have had to hold it. And the other aspect of the hope is, we can't undo what has been done to survivors, but through creating awareness, hopefully we can get it out here. Look, this is the detriment that you're going to have if you so choose to do this, you know, and have that as a preventative aspect. We can't prevent something that society is not talking about. Those people that do go on to cause harm and continue into adulthood through trying to keep the sibling quiet so it doesn't come out, they need to understand the damage that does.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In terms of, I'm just thinking about, you know, that whole idea of opening the floodgates when something is in the media, whether it's television or print media, even more so when it's such a huge program like Hollyoaks. Where can people go if they are a victim or survivor and they're seeking support?
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say, if you're a victim or a survivor and you're seeking that peer-to-peer support from other people that have been impacted, please visit our website, www.siblingsexualabusesupport.org. If you're looking one-on-one support, contact Rape Crisis England and Wales National 24/7 Sexual Abuse Helpline. So their number is 0808-500-2222. If you're thinking about engaging in sexual behaviours with a sibling or have done in the past, it would be Lucy Faithful Foundation at stopitnow.org.uk. They have support for adults who have caused sexually abusive behaviours, and they also have a younger project now for children under 18 engaging in those behaviours. So seek the support and make sure that you recognise that there is help there to prevent you from continuing. There's also, if you're in America, www.siblingsexualtrauma.com has an extensive amount of resources and can signpost to other organisations. But basically, thankfully, there is more information now out there on the internet than there was a year ago.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So we will link those contact details anyway in the blog that will go out with this podcast if any of the listeners missed any of that. Tanith, I think this is what you're doing is fantastic. I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but I just want to say thank you for, you know, highlighting this. And I think as the storyline continues, you know, it'd be interesting to see what developments you see in regards to professionals and contact and your groups as well. And maybe it'd be nice to catch up with you in sort of 6 months time and see what's going on there and what the future holds for your project.
Yes, definitely. That would be a huge privilege. And I just want to dedicate all the work to the adult survivors that are out doing this. They are the ones creating the legacy of change for this project. Yeah. I just, as I refer to myself, I'm just the person steering the ship. They are the ones doing all the hard graft. And in relation to Hollyoaks, they are going to cover so many different facets. You know, at present, it's about Frankie and the impacts. They will then go to show the impacts that it creates and the whole dynamics of the family and then the impacts of JJ. Just to be able to cover a storyline in that amount of depth can really show people there is help and support there. So thank you very much for having me on this. It's been a privilege. And as I say, I could talk for hours. I just hope that I answered everything and didn't digress off to different topics.
No, not at all. It was amazing. I think this project is just extraordinary, and hope that people recognize the extraordinary nature of your project, and then it can, this model that you've created can be implemented across different areas. Because I think the empowerment of survivors and it being by them and for them, so to speak, is critical.
100%.
Thank you so much, Tanith. If any of our listeners have any questions, obviously do get in contact with us and we can pass them on to Tanith or the particular organization. And again, thank you very much, listeners. And we hope you join us on another podcast soon. So thanks, everyone. And thanks, Kathleen. Thanks, Tanith.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.